Soul. Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo. Today, I have a recent Firebird winner to share with you. She is Gail Priest, and her winning book is titled Soul Dancing. Gail has a passion for women's fiction. Her degrees and work in theater and counseling psychology inspire her stories of healing from trauma and secrets within families. A dash of romance and her love of second chances are always in the mix. The settings of her novels are influenced by her time spent on the coast of New Jersey and the eastern shore of Maryland. Gail lives in New Jersey with her husband and their Havanese dog, Annie. When she's not writing, Gail can be found reading or looking for birds and sea glass along the beaches and bays of the East Coast. She is the author of Soul Dancing, the author of the book The Annie Kroll Knoll Trilogy, and Eastern Shore Shorts. She's a member of the Women's Fiction Writers Association, Eastern Shore Writers Association, Novelitics Writers Collective, and the South Jersey Writers Group, where she was named Writer of the Year. You can tell we have so much to talk about today. Welcome to the network, Gail.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
I am very happy you are here as well. And congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Award.
Oh, I'm so pleased. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And you were surprised by that. I guess you didn't get my initial...
I was. Yes, I was very surprised. No, it got lost in the cyber world somewhere. Your email telling me, so I'm glad I followed up with you.
Oh my gosh, you know what it is? It's Gmail. Anytime I email to Gmail and there's a link in it, or if it's an attachment, or if there's anything a little bit lengthy in there, I don't know what they do. They put me elsewhere, which is not a good thing. Not good. But I'm glad you found out.
Yes, and I'm very, very thrilled. It's wonderful.
Thank you. You know, I love sea glass. There is just something so magical about it. I don't even know what it is. Tell us about your finds before we dig into your book. Just tell us a little about sea glass.
Well, I discovered sea glass when we started renting a cottage on the Chesapeake Bay, right at the headwaters on the Sassafras River. A lot of sea glass up there. Now, there's not as much now, but there used to be a lot, and I collected it like crazy, and I enjoyed making things with it. I covered our entire cottage front door with it, just a collage or mosaic, if you will, and made other things with it, and I just love the colors and the shapes, like reading about where the different colors come from, and then one morning on the beach, right where our cottage was located, I found little clay Ganesh. You know, the Indian god with the elephant head and the whole row of arms.
Yes.
Now, how that ended up on the eastern shore is just beyond me. But that was my best find ever, even though it wasn't glass. It was such a great find.
Oh, my. Why do some areas have more than others, I wonder?
I think it has to do with the currents and how much, well, it's trash. You know, it's people that fishermen and people that are out on pleasure boats. Back in the day, they would just throw their bottles and trash into the water. Mm. Now people don't do that as much, thank goodness, which is why you don't find it as easily. Uh-huh. But, it just gets churned up in the sand and the waves and the currents, and it gets smooth. You have to make sure a piece is ready, You don't want to take one that's too sharp. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that it's smooth and has a good color to it. But it comes from all kinds of Coke bottles and milk of magnesia and Noxema cream, and it's crazy. And it's hard to find blue. Mm-hmm. A red's really hard to find. But I do have, I think I found one red all these years, but I found some blue. So I made that a big part of my Annie Kroll Knoll trilogy because that takes place right where my cottage was that we rented for 17 years. It was a cottage community. And I created the characters that owned and lived there, and they would collect sea glass. And they would also make things out of it, because I feel like the beauty of any natural area is very healing.
Yes.
And the Chesapeake Bay is particularly beautiful to me. And then using what's there, if you're making photographs or you're making mosaics or painting, whatever you're doing, that art can really help heal trauma and difficulties too. So that's a big part of the trilogy.
Right. Oh, I love this. I love this. You have a beautiful life.
Thank you.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, thank you for sharing sea glass with us. They're just like little gems when you find it. It's just like so, so special. Yeah.
They really are.
For sure. All right, we'll dig into your book, Soul Dancing. Now, although soul dancing has a paranormal twist, the themes of family secrets, forgiveness, redemption, and second chances are in it, similar to your other books, the Annie Kroll Knoll Trilogy and Eastern Shore Shorts. So before we get into the book, Soul Dancing, what draws you to write about family secrets, forgiveness, redemption, and second chances?
Well, a few things. One is my background's in theater, and most of my favorite plays are about dysfunctional families. And I love playing those characters. I like reading about those characters. And I wrote a couple of plays before I became a novelist, and they were also about dysfunctional families. I like that topic. They're interesting characters. They have a lot of drama to them, and my favorite thing, of course, is to have things work out where they find a way to heal. They find a way to reach out to each other. That doesn't always happen with Tennessee Williams. You know, it's usually pretty tragic, but he is my favorite playwright. And then I have a counseling degree along with a theater degree. And my counseling was really focused on family therapy. So I learned a lot about the family structure and how it works and how problems are passed down through generations. And so I'm very fascinated by that. So I do write about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, usually a person's experience or background or jobs kind of feed what it is that they write about. That makes sense. So give us a peek.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, give us a peek into Soul Dancing, women's fiction with a paranormal twist. Give us a little look inside.
So that's my newest novel. It came out in May, last May, and I've never written anything paranormal, but the idea came to me that this older woman would pass away, and somehow, for whatever reason, she would not want to go to the light. So what came to me was that the character Shirlene Foster, she really loves her husband and feels responsible for taking care of him, and he's 93. So she doesn't want to leave him, and she wasn't supposed to die first. So when she resists the light, she is shocked to wake up in another woman's body. And even more surprising, it's a 20-year-old, and she's in a hospital delivery room giving birth. And Shirlene is figuring no one is going to believe her, so she tries to pretend to be this other young woman. But she realizes she can't do this for too long. She's going to have to tell somebody. And the other main character is Cameron Michaels, who has vowed to raise his niece after his brother abandoned his pregnant girlfriend, Rain. And Rain's kind of difficult. She's had a real rough life. She's lived on the street. She's got addiction issues. She's not easy to deal with. But he really wants to raise his niece. And after the birth of the child, Rain completely changes. Her personality changes drastically. And finally, Shirlene confesses to him that she is inhabiting Rain's body. And although Cameron finds this really a wild story, it does explain Rain's complete transition. So as Shirlene gets a second chance at life and a second chance at motherhood, which is really important to her because she lost a child in her previous life experience, she struggles to keep the growing attraction that she and Cameron are feeling for each other in check. And also, she soon discovers that her new body may not be hers for long. So she has a lot of dilemma going on here. And I love triangles. So I've got her husband, Stan, and Charlene and Cameron in a triangle. They're very fascinating to me, too.
What inspired you to combine women's fiction and paranormal elements in your writing?
Yeah, it is kind of crazy.
Well, not really, not at all, but it's interesting.
It's a little out of the box is what I really mean. Because a lot of authors are afraid, they're worried to change genres or cross genres. And I found myself with this idea, and I don't know if I dreamed it up or I just dreamt it. I'm not really sure how it came to me. But I had this concept of a woman coming back in a younger woman's body and having a second chance at things. And I didn't even feel so much that it was paranormal at first. I just thought it was an interesting situation. But then as I worked on the book and I was talking to my author friends and, you know, I'm constantly studying how to market my books and so forth, I began to realize that I had to put this in some kind of genre. It had to fit someplace, and I was having trouble fitting it. So that's where I came up with, well, you know, it's really women's fiction, because actually both characters, it can be a man or a woman that goes through a journey, an emotional journey. Typically, it's more often a woman in women's fiction, but it can be a man. Well, both Charlene and Cameron go through this journey where they have to resolve things, and they change and they grow, and that's really what women's fiction's about. But then there was this unusual twist, and I didn't even know quite what to call it for a while. I didn't know, is it science fiction? Is it fantasy? Is it paranormal? But I landed on paranormal because of the ghostly feel to it. Mm-hmm. So that's where it landed. But it was quite a journey. And there's also romance in it. So I think that cross-genre is very appealing to people. Mm-hmm. And when I tell them about the story and I mention the paranormal twist, people's faces always light up. They go, oh, mm-hmm. That sounds really different. And it is.
It is, and that's why it won first place in cross genre and second place in women's fiction.
Yeah. That was such a fun thing for me to put it in the cross genre category. I hadn't seen that category in other situations, and I thought, that's just perfect. That's where she belongs.
I love that. We also have a weird book category, which we put in a couple years ago, just because there's more genre bending going on, I think, than ever before, which I think that's refreshing. You know, you're not stuck in a box, and you could create what you like. It sounds like you were even surprised by yourself as this was unfolding.
I really was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised. And there's this major twist halfway through the novel. I don't want to say anything about it, but I listen to my characters. That's how I write. They tell me what's going on. And it's very cinematic for me. Mm-hmm. I really see them. Sometimes I see them something, and they won't tell me what it is yet, and I get frustrated. But they do talk to me, and a lot of authors feel this way. I know I'm not, you know, psychotic or anything, but I used to think maybe there was something wrong with me, but no, lots of authors feel this way. They really listen to their characters. So midway through this exploration of soul dancing, a character told me something very shocking, and I had to go with it. Mm. It was poo. It was really hard for me to accept, but it was how it had to go, and I'm really glad I listened. Yeah, it was the best thing to do. Don't fight your characters. That's what I've learned.
That's a great piece of advice. I'm going to write that down. Don't fight your characters. And you are not alone. I've interviewed thousands and thousands of authors, and so many of them say exactly the same thing, which I just find astounding, because the character is not a real person. It's coming from you. And yet, the author feels and treats these characters as if they were right there in the room with them. That's just so fascinating to me.
Yes, yes. And it's, have you ever seen the movie The Man Who Invented Christmas, a holiday movie.
No.
It's about Charles Dickens. Dan Stevens from, I can't remember the name of the series. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. But Dan Stevens, oh, I know one thing he did. He did Beauty and the Beast with Emma Watson, you know.
Yes.
Anyway, he's a wonderful young actor. Well, he's not so young anymore, but anyway. He's very good. He plays Charles Dickens. And when he's struggling to write A Christmas Carol, and he's under all kinds of pressure because he owes a lot of money and debt. Everybody's, annoyed with him. He's really struggling with his agent and his publisher and his wife and his family. He starts coming up with the idea of Scrooge. Well, Scrooge shows up on screen with him. And then slowly but surely, all the characters start kind of haunting him, and they're in his writing room with him, and they follow him on the streets when he tries to get away from them. It's quite charming. It really is. Because it's exactly like that.
Yes. Well, I love that. I was interviewing a gentleman once who said that his whole family really was highly involved in his writing process and characters, and would give him advice and listen to what he had to say about his characters, to the point that I believe they had a dinner one night and set the table for the family and the characters.
That's really fun. I wonder what the characters wanted to eat.
I know. They invited the characters for dinner. I just thought that was just so cool.
That's very charming.
Very much so. Oh, goodness. Yeah, I make a reservation at a restaurant for 12 and two people show up.
That's great.
I brought my book with me.
Oh, it was Downton Abbey. That was the series.
Okay, yes.
Was in.
Downton Abbey, yes.
Yeah, he's wonderful.
Oh, goodness.
Great job with Charles Dickens.
Yes. Check that out. You probably didn't think about this when you were doing it, but maybe after the fact, or if you were going to continue writing like this, how would you say that you navigate the genre expectations of both women's fiction and paranormal while still bringing your unique voice and perspective to the whole story?
That's a great question.
And maybe you didn't, because you were kind of occurred as you were doing it.
Right. I was just about to say, I followed my gut instinct. Mm-hmm. That's what I did. I didn't plan it out. And I have found that, authors can be, they're called either pantsers or plotters.
Right.
And plotters write out their whole plot in an outline. They know exactly what's going to happen, beginning, middle, and end, before they even start writing. And I admire those people. But I can't do that because it kills my creative kind of inspiration. Mm-hmm. So I'm a pantser. Now, I do believe that helps me to write things down eventually. I might put them on note cards or sticky cards, and I put them up on a wall or a door, or a bulletin board, and I move things around and play with things. But that's really later in the process when I kind of have the story mapped out. Mm-hmm. But when I'm actually writing, I'm just going with the flow. Right. And sometimes it doesn't make sense. I don't write in order. I write all over the place. I might be writing the next to the last scene first, right, because it's just what came to me. It's what they're telling me. But I did take a break from soul dancing because Mouse Press approached me to write Eastern Shore Shorts. And that took a year. And I was very busy with them at book signings and so forth. So it took a while to get back to soul dancing. And when I did, I felt very stuck. I really didn't know where I was going, what was happening. And the South Jersey Writers Group, who offers courses, had a day class in outlining. And I thought, well, I don't really like outlining, but I'm going to go. I'm going to see what happens. Because I needed something to move me out of my stuck spot.
Yeah.
And this wonderful teacher talked about a mind map option to outlining. And she went through the whole regular formal outlining, but then she talked about mind maps. And she said, I'm going to give you a big piece of paper, lots of colored markers, and you just start writing in circles and arrows and underlining and highlighting and find out what you find out about your current work. And that's what happened with soul dancing. I became completely unstuck. I discovered that Chase had a brother. I'm sorry, Cameron had a brother named Chase. And I found all these things out, and they were just shapes and lines, and it was a mess, but it worked for me.
Wow.
Very, very helpful.
Wow.
Yeah, so that really tied things up for me. I could start writing again.
Oh, my. You were just on a journey and just kind of following it along. It was like you weren't even in charge here.
No, I'm not in charge. The characters are in charge.
Apparently. I love that. Did you have to do any research to ensure accuracy or authenticity in the paranormal elements of the book?
I did talk to a friend who has psychic abilities. Mm-hmm. And so I trust her to help me make sure this made sense, how it was going. So she gave me feedback, and that supported where I was headed. It made sense to her. If I had been doing something that didn't make any sense, she would have told me.
Right, right.
But I had to do really more research on other elements of the story. For example, childbirth point. You know, what is it like? What's the delivery room like? Where do you go? You know, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And one of my nieces is having a family, and she's a nurse. So that was a big help.
Yes.
Because that wasn't something I was experiencing at this point in my life. And I really thought, I need to know what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, the father's there. You end up in a private room. You know, things are set up very differently than they used to be.
Right.
So that was very helpful for me. When I wrote anything on the Eastern Shore, which this is not, it's Delmarva Peninsula, it's Philadelphia and Rehoboth Beach. But my other books are really Chesapeake-based. I had to do a lot of research, and I had to rely on a lot of friends, because there was things about fishing, things about boats, things about boat restoration. So I had to depend on a lot of research for those, mm-hmm. and also help from experts. In the last book, the two main characters are Annie's granddaughters, and they're injured in a bombing. And I had to really find out what their injuries were going to be like, what the healing process would be, mm-hmm. what would the surgeons be saying, you know, all of that had to make total sense. So got a hold of a doctor that knew a military doctor. So she also understood, because one of the main characters was military, not the two girls, young women, but a man that one of them is in love with was a military man. And I had to really understand what was happening for him too.
Yes.
So yeah, I love research. And one of my favorite genres to read is historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep, you know, being sort of teased into that direction, but I haven't gone there. And I'm a little nervous to go there. But my friends who write it and the books that I read and love, there's a ton of research.
Yes.
I've always enjoyed research. That's always been something that appealed to me when I was doing my degrees and things.
Yes. Yes, I love research. And what's a little dangerous about research is that I tend to go down the rabbit holes and end out researching and not doing what I'm supposed to be doing. So it's easy to wander around that research rabbit hole.
Yes,
sure.
Absolutely right. A lot of us end up getting so in love with the story of these, you know, the history and what was being used, and what were medical instruments like, and what were poisons like, and you could go crazy and just get lost in that world and never come out of research. You've got to write the book.
It's so true, but research is so important, because you never know who's going to be reading your book that has that kind of knowledge, and you surely wouldn't want to be saying something wrong, because readers are darn savvy, and they'll pick up on that. So research is extremely important.
It's so, so true, Pat. Mm. And my husband reads everything first. Well, once I'm comfortable with having him read it, might be a second draft, but it's early. And he always catches things. Mm-hmm. And he reminds me I have to straighten this out or that out, because he's extremely knowledgeable and well-read, and he catches things. Yeah. And I know what it's like to read something. Like, we're both birders. And when someone writes something incorrect about a bird, drives us crazy. Mm-hmm. And I'm pulled out of the story, and I think, no, that can't happen. Mm-hmm. I wish they had checked on that. Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh. And he's a photographer, so, you know, whenever I have people taking photographs, and what kind of camera are they using, and what kind of lens, and all that, it's really important to get that correct so people aren't pulled out of the book.
Yes, yes. There's nothing worse than that, because you feel disturbed and you almost can't continue with it. So good thing you have your husband around to do that initial checking, too. That helps.
I am. I'm very lucky.
Well, I hope that you...
He's very supportive.
I hope you can get into the historical fiction writing. I'm thinking you'd be so good at that. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. I sure love to read it.
Well, I'm in your corner there. Are there any other upcoming projects or stories that you're working on that continue any kind of fusion of genres that you see in the near future?
I just had this conversation with my cousin-in-law, because she loved Soul Dancing, and she goes, you have to write another one. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know, because it doesn't feel like a direction I want to go in, only because it seems like I've already written it. It's sort of done now.
Yes.
So if someone comes back, you know, in another body, it's like, well, they've read that. Why would people want to read that again? So I'm putting that on the back burner. I don't know. Never say never. But I'm back to pretty much pure women's fiction with some romance mixed in. I have a Christmas story. It's short. It's a novelette coming out this fall before the holidays, called A Collingswood Christmas. And the last couple of weeks, I really had fun re-editing that. I've had to make some changes. I hadn't picked it up in years. But this is the holiday season where it's going to be out there. And it all takes place in my hometown of Collingswood, New Jersey. So it's I like the alliteration. I always like alliteration. Collingswood Christmas, it's fun.
Oh, my gosh.
So I spent years teaching, and I was a guidance counselor. So the main character, Kyle, is a guidance counselor with a theater background. He helps the kids with the plays. So it's based on a lot of actual background from my life. It's a romance, really. It's not totally women's fiction. It's really a romance. So, yeah, it's sweet. It had people... I always have characters that are very complex, dealing with difficult situations. Mm-hmm. Kyle is still grieving his young wife's passing. And the other character, Megan, is breaking up with her husband. And she's never resolved her father's abandonment. So there's meat in there, because I like that. I feel like it adds reality. You know, we're all struggling with things.
Right.
But I always have it end up happily. Unlike Tennessee Williams.
Exactly.
We'll go back to good old Tennessee. You know, his stuff is tragedy. I don't write tragedy.
No, you are the author. You could take it wherever you choose, right?
Yes, that's true. That's true.
Oh, my gosh.
So I'm working on that. I have a novel that I've been working on for quite a while. And it's called Jackson's Jetty, and I've had to put that on the back burner because I'm stuck. Maybe I should do a mind map.
A mind map, yes.
Just the answer, yes.
Yep.
But I also am looking at a play that I wrote quite a while ago. I have to decide if I'm going to set it back in that time, move it here, like 20 years. But it's called A Thing with Feathers, and I'm seriously looking at that to make it into a novel. I have a screenplay version of it, and I have a play, a stage play version of it. But I think it would make a really good novel, so I'm starting to head over there and see if that's going to happen.
I just love you. You're just so rich with so many wonderful and fun ideas here. I'm looking forward to everything. I'm looking forward to your Christmas one coming up, too. It sounds like it could be a future Hallmark movie.
Oh, I wouldn't that be wonderful?
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be just great.
Oh, yes. Written by Gabe.
I love holiday movies.
Me too. I love that they show them in the middle of July too, so you can watch them year round.
Christmas in July.
Absolutely, absolutely. Oh, you're awesome. Well, my friend, anything we missed that you wanted to bring up today or talk about?
I just want to encourage people who are writing to keep at it and to not let the marketing end of it, which is a huge part of the job, is marketing.
Yes.
Don't let that deter you from following your dream and following your characters, and to really make the commitment and go for it. And there are so many writing groups and so many resources out there that you can find. The Women's Fiction Writers Association, for example. I mean, this is the best group. You can get a lot of support from the members, from the courses that they offer, the conferences they have, and there are lots of groups like that. There are ways to find out what you need to find out, and just be patient and keep plugging along.
Yes. Thank you for that inspiration. Authors supporting authors, and it really is quite quite a group, a vibrant group, really, of people that are willing to help people all across the genres, not just women's fiction, but every writing group. They're just so valuable. So great advice. Thank you for sharing that. All righty. Well,
absolutely.
If you would, maybe give us all of your contact information or just the places people can go to find out more about you and get copies of your books.
Sure. My books are on all the usual retailers, so you just Google me and they'll pop up. But a central resource where I have everything listed is my website, which is www.galepriest.com. It's very simple. I'm so lucky to have gotten that domain. I couldn't believe how lucky I was to get my own name. So my website has links to everything, and you can get all the books right from there and sign up for my newsletter that I send out usually once a month or every couple months. And I have some resources on the website and background to different stories. So there's a lot of fun stuff to find there.
Absolutely. All right. We are speaking with Gail Priest, Firebird Book Award winner for the book titled Soul Dancing. Also check out Annie Crow Knoll Trilogy and Eastern Shore Shorts at the website GailPriest.com. Gail, I love this conversation. Thank you. I'm so happy you
me
joined
too.
Us.
I had a great time, Pat. Thank you.